Telecast, the TV industry news review.
Is it boom time for Scotland's TV production sector? What about industry diversity in Scotland? And what happens to the country's TV industry in the event of Scottish independence? Find out on this week's Telecast. This week, we're taking a look at the Scottish TV industry, its past, its present, and its future. And to help us look at the landscape, I'm delighted to welcome one of the most experienced TV producers, former Director of Content at STV Productions and now MD of Two Rivers Media, Alan Clements. And also joining me is BAFTA-nominated director and managing director at independent production company Create Anything, Stuart Chisimary. Welcome to the show, Alan and Stuart.
Hello.
Hi, Justin. Delighted to be here.
Great to have you guys on the show. It's been a while since we've looked at the TV landscape of a particular territory, and it struck me that we haven't focused on Scotland yet. So I'm delighted we've got you both on the show to help me put that right. Alan, coming to you first, you set up Two Rivers in 2018 after a decade as director of content at STV. What are the biggest learnings that you took from your time at STV to bring to your new business?
Well, hi, Justin. As I said, absolutely delighted to be here. What were the biggest learnings? I think diversity of genre. I think you learn about trying to hire the best people, and you learn the importance of trying, particularly in an indie, to conserve cash at key moments.
Okay, and so you produce both scripted and non-scripted content at Two Rivers Media.
We incorporated the company in January 2019, so we're 2 and a bit years old. And when I set up the company, I was really determined to set up an indie of scale in Scotland. Because it felt to me that there was finally a brilliant opportunity to build something substantial outside of London. And I guess it wasn't just my experience at STV, but obviously at IWC Media before that, where obviously I was one of the founding creators in it, and at Work Clements before that. And I guess one of the few benefits of being really old is that you try and use that experience to your benefit. So when we set up Two Rivers, I look for proper investment, and we took on 3 investors to begin with. And so far, we've managed in the 2 and a bit years to survive both one of those investors going bust and a pandemic. So still here. So I'm taking that as a positive sign.
Absolutely. And that's obviously Q Media, right?
Yes, it was Q Media.
It is quite something, and there is one other business I'm aware of who's had a similar, been through, you know, similar hurdles, extricating themselves from that investment deal. But also, you know, as soon as they've done that, obviously the pandemic hit. So it's testament that you're here and speaking to us on Telecast and still presumably busy. Tell us what you're working on.
Yeah, I would say on the Q Media, we were very lucky. We managed to extricate ourselves 2 days before they went into administration, because if you're trying to get out of a company that has gone into administration, it's incredibly difficult legally. But we get out, and our current investors, Noble Grossart Investments and the Channel 4 Growth Fund, both stepped up to buy Q stake. So actually, we weren't disadvantaged in any way in getting out of Q. So we were one of the lucky ones, because some of the very, very good companies were horribly affected by that.
And it's probably actually better to have 2 investors rather than 3, right? Purely from an admin perspective, it must be a little bit easier.
Well, you learn to manage the investors you have, and I'm really delighted. And Q were very supportive and helped get the company started. So I've no criticism of Peter and Stephen, because they were very good to us, and I'm very sorry what happened to them. But no, 2 investors, 3 investors, 4 investors, I think you just learn to manage it. That's back to the experience. It has been a very busy year, particularly in Factual and Popular Factual. Entertainment's been a little slower, as you might imagine, during the pandemic. And then the scripted business under Marcus Wilson and his team was always going to be in a development phase the first 2 years of any company. So it really probably affected them least of everybody.
I guess it's probably affected those production businesses that maybe 4 years ago decided that they wanted a drama division and spent the 2 years in development. And then when they had their numbers in the Excel spreadsheets, then they weren't allowed to sort of or able to go out and win their pitches and start production, which is probably happened to a lot more companies than we're probably aware of.
Yeah, I think that's certainly true. So if you're going to have a pandemic, I guess we had it at the best time, if that doesn't sound too convoluted. I think we've come out of it stronger and we produced all the way through it. So on Tuesday this week, a couple of days ago, we had a major film on BBC Scotland, now on the iPlayer, called Killing Escobar, that was theatrically released. And we shot it during the pandemic in the UK, in the US, and in Colombia. And we've also continued both with virtual filming and sending basic crews out to continue Escape to the Chateau and Escape to the Chateau, Make Doing Men, all the way through the pandemic. So I think we've done pretty well, all things considered.
Absolutely. And what else are you working on right now?
I'm just doing the numbers with our head of finance this morning, and you know that we are really hopeful of picking up some pilots and entertainment, and the scripted developments are starting to come through. And I think that's testament to the team that joined at the start of Two Rivers and have remained. When we were recruiting, we used a brilliant recruitment agent called Indigo Talent.
That's right. We had them on the show a few weeks ago.
So that's correct. And I remember sitting with them in the Mortimer House Cafe, their very nice headquarters. And I said, I only have two criteria for people. One, everybody moves and lives and works in Scotland. And secondly, no arseholes. In a hurry, we've got a lot to do, and we really want the best people. And she just bust out laughing and went, okay, that's the clearest brief I've ever had from any company setting up.
That is very clear and quite right. And actually, I do share the same policy. The second policy point you talked about, I actually share that as well. So it makes life a lot easier. So this week, we're talking about Scotland, and we're going to come on to talk to Stuart in detail in a second. But just to set the scene of the TV production landscape in Scotland, Alan, can you give us an idea of how it's developed and why it's developed in the way that it is, and where's it at right now?
Well, I would say, Justin, that one of the few benefits of being a veteran or being this old is that I've lived through at least three iterations of work moving the TV industry out of London. And this time, it is not only real, it is substantial, and more important, it is irreversible. And it's got its own momentum now. And so I think this is definitely the best of times to be an out-of-London indie. And I think the opportunities are great. It has been a very checkered record by the major broadcasters, but it is definitely for real this time. And as well as the demand for broadcasters for production from Scotland for the network, you also have an agency now in Screen Scotland under Isabel Davis and David Smith that understands television in a way that its predecessors didn't, and are supportive of television because their predecessors were obsessed by indie film, which is, in my view, struggles to be called an industry. You know, it's a creative force and very important, but it's not an industry the way television is. So Screen Scotland have been pivotal with the backing of the Scottish Government at driving this growth as well. So there's been a kind of pull me, push you process going on that's been really, really good for Scotland.
We were talking before the show, before we started recording, about the fact that it's not really a north-south divide. There's an east-west divide in Scotland because, you know, in terms of the infrastructure of TV production in Scotland, it's all in Glasgow, isn't it? There's very little elsewhere. Is that right?
Yeah, it's mainly in Glasgow. There's a little patch in Aberdeen, and there's some ad agencies in Edinburgh and a couple of the smaller companies, but by and large, it's in Glasgow. But it's interesting, Justin, I don't think that's just a Scottish issue. I think that's a UK issue. So if you look at a map of the UK and go down the West Coast and you look at Glasgow and Manchester, stroke Salford, Bristol, Cardiff, there's really significant centres of production all the way down the West Coast. If you go down the East Coast, Edinburgh, Newcastle, Leeds and Norwich, it's only really Leeds that has a significant basis, and that's smaller than its rival in Manchester, you know, just across the Pennines. And then, of course, there's the great anomaly of Birmingham, which is such an exciting city, such a major population and a very young population. And actually, it has probably less production than a place like Bristol, which is of a mystery in the UK as well.
It is a fascinating the way that things seem to have evolved over the years. And obviously, the changes that have been announced recently by the BBC and Channel 4 and other broadcasters to really commit to building nations and regions hubs and offices and really have a quota of commissioning from local producers. That's really going to change. And that's obviously what you were alluding to.
Yeah. In a lifetime packed full of mistakes, I think setting up a nations and regions indie right now is not one of them.
Absolutely. I'm going to come back to talk to you a second about that, because I can imagine there's quite a few interlopers that are setting up shop in Glasgow at the moment, but London Indies trying to cash in a little bit on this local focus. But park that for the moment. Stuart, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Tell us about Create Anything.
Well, Create Anything is a production company. We've been around for the past roughly year and a half. I am the managing director. We're just a very young company, and we're trying to come into the industry with a different approach. I come from digital background, making content for online. So we're trying to diversify our content and find, I would say that we're a colorful palette production company. We're a production company that will never have the diversity chat, which we've all been having over the last year or so. Young company looking to tell diverse stories. I'm currently working on a couple of dramas and a talk show. We're also a company that started television and film talent, diverse talent pool called Reframe, which is launching at the end of the week. We currently have like 500 plus CVs from diverse, you know, BAME and, you know, women, et cetera, et cetera. So we're a two-pronged approach.
So you've also been directing as well, haven't you? Were nominated for a BAFTA award for a recent project. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so people know me for my documentary Black and Scottish that was aired at the end of 2019 on BBC Scotland. It grew arms and legs. It was a documentary where, as I said, I've always been a filmmaker. So, you know, for years, being a 6'4" black Scot traveling out even in Scotland and outside of Scotland, I'd always hear, we didn't know that there was black people in Scotland. And of course, I knew there was, and I knew there was ridiculously talented people coming, black people coming from Scotland. You've got people like Shiti Gatwa and Emily Sandy, etc. So I knew a vast amount of talented individuals from all walks of life. So obviously, as a filmmaker, and having access to cameras, it's a case of, right, okay, I think I need to rectify this and tell this story. The documentary was centered around my daughter, Yasmin, and she, growing up in Scotland, I did receive racism, and, you know, there was a lack of identity on my part. So I wanted to make sure that the next generation could look at, you know, find role models in Scotland instead of looking out, you know, outside of Scotland, and, you know, giving her, letting my kids feel like they will always be accepted, and, you know, they're not different, they're unique. So it was centered around her, and I started putting together a kind of sizzle reel for it. I started interviewing black Scots, your everyday black Scots, talented individuals, and then we pitched I'm fortunate enough to stay in an area where, for some reason, there's loads of people from the BBC that live here. So I've managed to speak to a producer who then spoke to a production company. And, you know, after pitching it to them and sharing the video, a couple of weeks later, we were talking about a commission. And, you know, I worked with Turn Television and directed that documentary. It was mainly a Talking Heads documentary with a bit of actuality. And the rest is history from there. It just grew arms and legs and got a lot of, it got a big audience, and Netflix were talking about it and promoting it, and other celebrities were speaking about it, and, you know, people, that's how people kind of know me.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, we'll put a link to Black and Scottish in the episode description so people can go and check it out. And you said that was produced with Turn TV. You were director on that. I mean, you're presumably pitching your own projects now with a view to having Create Anything produce a project for a broadcaster.
Yes, and we already have. We have another documentary out called Bash the Entertainer, Behind the Smile. It's about a social media star, black star, millions and millions of followers and video views, but he suffers from PTSD, so it's the kind of what it's like behind the camera, behind the smile. So we have a production there, a co-production there. We are in talks with the BBC for a couple of other projects, which will solely be Create Anything, because that's the one from the networks that I'm working with, is that no more co-pros. We're just having a chat about no longer being a director for hire, so that we can concentrate on running Create Anything and
building your business.
Yeah, building the business. So that's what we're doing just now. We actually are in a position where, you know, we've speaking to a couple of companies about partnership and getting that kind of leg up injection of money for us to continue to do what we're doing. So I know it's an early stage just now, but for a company that's been around for over a year, we're already having that discussion. So really excited about that.
Absolutely. Well, congratulations on your success so far.
Thank you.
How difficult did you find entering the TV industry to begin with in Scotland?
To begin with in Scotland, I was very, you know, just I was very, very lucky, extremely lucky, because I'm self-sufficient. You know, I came from an industry, a design and film industry part prior to this, and I was a contractor, and I was running Create Anything prior to that as a kind of design film and just company, and I managed to buy my own equipment, buy my own cinema cameras, and, you know, lighting kit, etc., because I also come from a cinematography background, so I was able to just go out and make a kind of high production, high value, 5 minute example of what Black and Scottish should be like, you know, with lighting and, you know, and so I had that piece of content. And as I said to you, I live in an area in Glasgow called Broomhill, and it's just across the road from me is two BAFTA winning directors and, you know, the head of BBC Children and execs at the BBC. So funny story was, we were watching, my partner and I were watching something on television, and we seen a credit, and it was one of the mums, my daughter's friend's mum. And she's like, you know, there's this producer and she's in television. You should really go and speak to her about Black and Scottish. And I was like, I can't do that. And so we were picking up our kids after school, and she was there, and my partner was like, just go and speak to her. So I just said, right, forget it. Let me just go and speak to her. And I showed her the trailer then and there, and I just seen her thinking about it, and she was quiet for a bit, and she said, this is interesting, let me speak to Turn Television. And then get a meeting with Turn, and they liked it and pitched it alongside another documentary, which was a Gail Porter documentary. And then we were in the BBC headquarters with Louise Thornton, who was the commissioner, and a couple of weeks, 3-4 weeks later, we were having the commission chat. They liked it. So it was sheer luck. It was a case of just, she was there at the right time. I was there. I know from speaking to other people that it would be a lot more difficult for them to get into the industry, because even prior to that, I looked at production, I looked at contacting production companies and going on BBC Pitch website and trying to register, and with no success.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a great story, Stuart, but actually it's not that unusual. If you look at London, the school gates chat that will be happening at Queen's Park and, you know, all of the other Notting Hill. This has been going on for years. So Broom Hill is the new centre of commissioning. So get your kids into school at Broom Hill.
And you know what's funny as well is the commissioner literally is across the road from my youngest's nursery. So she's I'm going for a walk with her next week.
Yeah, it's a people business, isn't it, really? Yeah. And that's the thing that mm-hmm. your story reinforces. There's obviously a focus right now on making the TV industry more ethnically diverse and also regionally representative of the population. Now, as a BAME-led producer in Glasgow, are you finding greater practical opportunities other than, obviously, you know, the networking that you're doing, presenting themselves to you right now in terms of commissioning?
Yes. You know, BBC just had the diversity chat, which I help lead on that. I've had conversations with Ofcom as well about diversity. They're basically mitigating, making sure that the networks are following suit, and also the amount of requests to come and direct this or that has been quite, you know, as I said, I've not been in the industry that long, but coming into the industry, I came into an industry where, you know, Black Lives Matter happened and, you know, a lot of companies awoke. Production companies and networks realizing that they need to create more content, as I said, a much more colourful palette. So, yes, I have seen a lot of Black people that I know of in the industry that are getting a lot more work, with skepticism in there as well, because a lot of them are saying that prior to that, they had, you know, no one was really speaking to them. Just a few odd jobs here and there, but it seems to be. Hopefully, ask me in 6 months' time, a year's time, and I'll tell you if it's changed at all. But the discussions are there, and the content is being made. There's a couple of networks out there that are trying really hard, you know, really going all out, like Channel 4's doing a thing called Black to Front, which is quite good. So there's some changes. I'm not seeing immediate changes, but I know that the discussions are happening.
Okay, well, things hopefully moving in the right direction. Many would say it's about time too, but it's great to hear. And I'll take you up on that. In a year's time, let's have another chat and let's see how things have gone for you.
Uh-huh.
Now, it's quite tricky to ascertain the value of the Scottish TV industry. Alan, you were talking about Screen Scotland and the work that they've been doing. I've been trying to find some figures to work out what the value of the Scottish TV industry is. And the latest figure I can find is in the region of £100 million, but that includes film as well. In terms of growth, obviously, we've seen the commitments from the national broadcasters in the UK to Scotland and to commissioning more regional content. Are you feeling confident about the growth in the country's TV industry?
Oh, most definitely. And I think you're about to be inundated with statistics because both Screen Scotland and PACT are about to do major pieces of research on the size and scale of the industry in Scotland. Again, maybe we should do this in a year's time, put that in the diary, and we'll be able to both come back and give you an update on how that's gone. I think it's a great time to be in Scotland and very much when I look at Two Rivers, it's the right people in the right place at the right time is the way we like to think about it. And the only thing I wouldn't be is being a middle-class white guy setting up an indie in London. I think that would be a pretty disastrous thing to be doing right now. but apart from that, I think if you're out of London and if you're from a diverse background, it's a great time to be setting up companies.
We're seeing lots of independent production groups and medium-sized indies opening up shop in Leeds and in Bristol and in places like Glasgow to essentially try and pitch for that local money. That must drive you mad, surely. You know, you don't want more competition on your doorstep pitching for this regional money. And I know there's lots of different ideas on quotas and how a production company is judged as to whether or not they are deserving of a local commission. What do you think, Alan? Because you must have seen this develop over the years, and we'll mention no names about these type of companies, but it must be pretty galling to be going through the tough times as well as the great times as a producer in Glasgow or elsewhere in Scotland, and to have these big, well-funded groups setting up going, we're a regional indie.
I try not to be galled. I try to think that any production in Scotland is good for Scotland because it increases the skills base. And it's a bit like if you see an area of London or an area of Glasgow where two or three restaurants set up and then it becomes a hub like Finiston in Glasgow, it's actually good for all the restaurants because people go there to eat food. So I think that all production from Scotland is good, but production from Scotland by Indigenous Scottish companies is by far superior. And I think a lot of the cynicism of lift and shift, you know, just moving shows here, is starting to die away. And the broadcasters realise that if you want to keep sustained production, you have to support local companies who, when the production's over, will still be there, as opposed to, you know, picking up sticks and leaving. And so, but all production is good. I don't think we can be little Scotlanders about it. I think if people come and they genuinely want to be here, like Lion Scotland have been here for a long, long time. Mentor's been in Glasgow for a long, long time. So I don't, you know, as long as people really mean it and they employ locally instead of just bringing everybody up and then going back down again, then I don't have any issue around that.
Coming to you, Stuart. So a resurgent Scottish TV industry, from a creativity and an IP perspective, what can the Scottish TV industry bring to international audiences? Because obviously stage one is about being able to get, you know, a good string of national commissions, great, great commissions from national broadcasters. But obviously step two is being able to go over to the States and sell shows and get commissions as well from international broadcasters. But what is the special ingredients that you think that Scottish TV can bring to the world?
Very good question. Okay, firstly, I would say what I'm noticing is high-end television is massive right now. You know, all you need to do is look at Amazon Prime and Netflix and look at things like BBC's His Dark Material and It's a Sin, Channel 4. They're spending film budgets on television shows. So that's one thing that everyone's should be bringing to the game, you know. But in a sense of Scotland, no, that's a very good question.
How about you, Alan? What do you think? I mean, is there an Indigenous ingredient that you think is a magic touch that will really make the Scottish TV industry fly internationally in the coming years?
I think that would be a slightly overblown claim, to be honest, Justin. But I think we do come from a great storytelling tradition. If you look at, you know, the writers and poets that Scotland has generated. And indeed, always makes me smile when people talk about Nordic noir and, you know, as if the Danes and the Swedes invented dark crime. They obviously have never read any Scottish crime books or indeed watched any episodes of Taggart, you know.
Yes.
I think we were definitely there first. And also, what is exceptional is the quality of the scenery here is the best in Europe, I would say. We do have advantages, but are we uniquely gifted? I think that's maybe a claim too far, to be honest.
Yeah, that's the reason why I was finding it difficult in the sense of uniquely gifted. I'm thinking one of the advantages is of our landscape that we have, Scotland in general, the kind of Celtic background as well. I would say looking at what has made Scotland popular internationally, you know, you've got is it Pixar that There was a, I think it was a Pixar movie, a Scottish film with.
Oh, Brave, yeah.
Yeah, that's it, Brave. You know, so that's kind of internationally how the world, not the world sees us, but, you know, it'll be to do with something to do with the landscape. James Bond, for example, they've shot many scenes here. So the landscape and story and story behind the landscape in Scotland is some of the key things we're good at telling
Well, I was only just watching Skyfall, bank holiday weekend, required viewing. That was brilliant. And I saw Highlander as well. And I know that Irving Welsh's new show, Crime, just started production in Scotland over the weekend as well. So there's all of those things rolled into one there. This show goes out on the day that there are some important elections happening across the UK and particularly in Scotland. Now, the question is, sort of elephant in the room, what happens to the Scottish TV industry if there is another independence referendum and Scotland votes to leave the UK? Alan, what do you think? What would that spell for Scottish TV industry, do you think?
Well, obviously, as someone who grew up making a lot of political shows, I'm very well versed, particularly in a period of Purdah, not to make any comment about that. Well, there's two interesting things. Firstly, no one has any doubts about how today's vote's going to go. And Nicola Sturgeon was actually on one of the debates saying, actually, I'm the only candidate in this debate for First Minister. Everybody else is running to be the head of the opposition, which was a really interesting insight, whatever your views on the current First Minister. So assuming the SNP win either as a minority or majority party, then I think their cultural and creative policies are very well set out in the manifesto. So I think the next 2 or 3 years is clear. To your bigger question, then I think, like everything, you would find a way. The way that, you know, the Irish have been very adept at not only running their own channels and making their versions of hit shows, but also becoming an absolute international hub for co-production. Well, the Section 48 benefits in Dublin's been such a big, big hub for drama production. So you would find a way. And yes, there would be a huge issue about Scottish people wanting to see Doctor Who and you know, Life on Earth or Coronation Street or wherever it might be. But there would definitely be a commercial deal be able to be arranged between an independent Scotland and network buyers. Because you've got to think the BBC is not going to not sell their shows to, let's call it SBC. Are they, or agree to co-produce shows? Because very much in their interest to do so. So I think these can always be sorted out. I'm not saying whether I'm in favour of it or against it. I've just said I don't think it's as insurmountable as you might think.
Just to add to that, I think, you know, BBC Scotland Channel, I think it's been around, I don't know how many years it's been around for, not that long, but that is our channel in a sense. So I think if we are independent, I think channels like that will be even more successful, and maybe some other channels might pop up as well. And because of that independence, you might find that Scottish people are more prone to looking within Scotland for more content as well. So, you know, it could be good for channels like BBC Scotland as well.
And now it's time in the show for Alan and Stuart to pick their story of the week, the TV industry news item that's caught their eye in the past 7 days. Alan, what's your story of the week?
So my story of the week was the briefing by the BBC on the criteria of diversity in order to access the £100 million set aside in the BBC budget for companies that are diverse-led or have diverse crew or are working on diverse stories. And I think as a straw in the wind for our industry, that is the most significant story from the last 7 days.
And that is that £100 million of existing commissioning budget over the next 3 years, right? From 2021 through to 2024.
Correct. And the fact it was led by both Charlotte and Patrick shows the significance and importance that the BBC attaches to this initiative.
And this will be supported by a new mandatory 20% diverse talent target in all new network commissions from April 2021.
Correct.
Interesting stuff. Stuart, how about you? What's your story of the week?
My story is the recent Noel Clarke allegations. 20 women have come and said there was some sexual abuse allegations and also a couple more with bullying. That is the story I've been looking at. For myself as a Black creative and someone working in television, I was truly disappointed, and genuinely my my reaction was, there's not many of us in the industry that can get to that kind of caliber to receive a special award BAFTA. And then it felt like it was taken away from us. And from listening to that story, watching companies like All Three Media pull the plug on his production company, and also, you know, Sky and his own production companies is failing now. It just shows how fragile the industry is. There was something that happened you a couple of years ago where you remember the old comedy Roseanne, and the main character, she, you know, there was a racist remark that came out, and Roseanne was supposed to be coming out the next year, and it all stopped just because of one person's comment. Everyone in that production, all cast, all crew, jeopardized their careers as well. So the upsetting thing for something like this, and running a production company myself, is look at how many people have had an effect on so many other people, production staff, and, you know, think of the people that were in Viewpoint, and they pulled the last episode of Viewpoint, which is his most recent drama. I'm currently making a film with Complicity Theatre in London, and the main character in that is in Viewpoint as well. So it's very close, personal to me, in the sense of this guy is saying, look, no one's watching Viewpoint anymore because of something Noel Clarke had done. So it affected him personally. So, you know, it's something to think about.
The wider impact, absolutely. There are allegations at this point, but I do believe there have been police reports about a report being made in connection with this whole issue over the weekend. So obviously we'll see how things develop over the coming weeks. And now it's time of the show where my guests get to nominate their hero of the week and who or what they're telling to get in the bin. Alan, who's your hero of the week?
I'm sorry, I'm going to be very serious with this section, though. I always try and look in the lighter side of life. But my hero of the week is President Joe Biden. In his first 100 days of office, he promised to deliver 100 million vaccines. And he's actually delivered 200 million vaccines. And my own son, who lives in New York and works in New York, is only 29 and has already had his vaccine. So very quietly, without tweets, without bombast, he has delivered something exceptional for the American people. And conversely, my villain of the week and who I would put in the bin would be Prime Minister Modi in India, who has done the exact opposite. And even though there were warnings of a second major wave, allowed religious festivals to go ahead, held major election rallies with mass crowds, and the poor people in Mumbai and Delhi are paying the price of that arrogance.
Yeah, I believe they even announced their victory over the coronavirus just a few weeks ago, didn't they? His party. So it was, it's really a tale of two leaders there. And you're right on Biden. I mean, what a breath of fresh air. Who? Donald Trump? Who? I don't know. Can we even remember him?
So it's a great vindication of boring guys everywhere.
Yes, there we are. How about you, Stuart? Who's your hero of the week?
I would have to say it's someone like Michaela Cole, director, producer, actress, doing really well in BAFTA this year, BAFTA 2021, and Steve McQueen's Small Axe.
Yeah.
So I would actually say the both of them.
Very good.
They're just very good. You know, they're giving us, they're shining a light on our talent. So, yeah.
Very good. And who or what you're telling to get in the bin, Stuart?
And I have to jump on Alan's bandwagon and say the Prime Minister, Narendra Modi, as well. It's affected me just seeing that, you know, seeing where we are just now in the Western world, and, you know, people are out drinking, and, you know, people are getting out in the world, and there's people dying in the streets, and, you know, being burnt.
Shocking scenes, you know, right.
Yeah. So that's the main thing for me. And also I'm worried that, you know, there's talking about African variants as well. I'm saying, you know, that spreads out to Africa, you know, So.
All right.
So, yeah, Alan, thank you. I mentioned Modi as well.
A double bin for Modi, I believe. Yes, we don't get many of those, but it's a double bin. Alan, Stuart, thank you so much for joining me this week. I could chat for a lot longer to you both and talking about Scotland. And let's do that. Let's meet up in another year's time and see how things have developed up in Glasgow and across the wider Scottish country to see how the TV industry's developed over the next 12 months.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
That would be wonderful, Justin. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, that's about it for another week's show. As always, thanks for listening. Don't forget to rate and subscribe to Telecast and share it with friends and colleagues. And a quick reminder to sign up for our free newsletter called Telecast Plus. It's packed with interesting TV industry stories of the week you may have missed, exclusive insight and opinion, including the secret producer, our intrepid anonymous exec, reporting from the front line of TV production. It's all completely free. Just visit our website to sign up at telecast-podcast.com. And you can also follow us on Instagram, LinkedIn, and Twitter. Telecast was edited by Ian Chambers and recorded in London. So until next Thursday, as always, stay safe.